Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson.
Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I've always been well treated on my previous visits. I feel that this will be no exception.
Well, I just realized something this morning. Now that live workshops are back, am I missing out on the first Sunday night supper club?
No, because you come in April. You're April. Okay. I think it's April 11th, April 10th, something like that.
Okay.
not quite sure. But I had a weird thing happen to me yesterday, because when we fly from Toronto to Chicago, I gain an hour. And then overnight, they took it away from me.
They took it away.
Like,
savings, exactly.
Yeah, and feeling just a bit jammed.
Discombobulated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, jammed. Yeah, I mean, come on, make up your mind. Make up your
right.
mind. Yeah, which is it? Yeah.
Well, I had an amazing
I'm interested. I have to go back and find out why and when this time change thing happened. Do you know?
Well, I think it was to maximize harvesting, you know, like farm work stuff, so that they could, I think that was what it was, to lengthen the daylight hours in the summer so that you could work longer on the farm. That's my understanding of what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you know a lot of people who are doing that in 2022?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's, and that's why there's an up, you know, there's a lot of like, there's a talk of Florida abandoning daylight savings, and Arizona has already opted out. I think there's lots of states and things that are opting out of it, or you're staying on one, opting out of daylight savings. But Florida was proposing to switch to, not to opt out of daylight savings, but to remain on daylight savings, which would be... So it would be weird to have all these states have individual choices. You know, you got to remember all the rules of what time, because I find that awkward about Arizona. Half the year, 2 hours, you know, apart, and now it's 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would also probably wreak havoc when it first happens with the airline schedules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
So we need that. So we go like China.
You know what it reminds me
China
of?
China does
you know,
it. One time zone.
Yeah, it reminds me. Well, China's one time zone, and China, you know, is a huge place. But you know what it reminds me of? This thing of a weird time system from the past. There's a sofa which you had for years, and then you say, you know, let's get a new sofa. So you get the new sofa. But you take the old sofa and you put it out on the back porch and you say, you know, we'll just put it there and then we'll take it. And it's been 10 years since you did that. And the old sofa is still on the back porch.
Yeah.
But it's attracted every dog and cat in the neighborhood, you know. And every time, and it's one of those things that every time you walk past the old sofa, you say, you know, we should really get rid of that, you know. And you've reminded yourself to do that 100 times, but you haven't done it. Probably daylight savings time has a lot like that. You know, we should really change that, but it's like the old sofa.
Yeah, time to rethink.
Well, what news do you have from Cloudlandia? Because I know you're a passionate scout and explorer and map maker of Cloudlandia.
I'll tell you what, Dan, so two things this week. I heard an interview with Mr. Beast on Joe Rogan this week.
Oh, wow, that must have been fun.
It was very well done. Very well done. Lots of news to report on that.
Did Joe Rogan take a knee with his 11 million?
Yeah, exactly.
His 11, I mean, did he realize he was in the presence of a deity?
Yes, you could tell. Like, this was an eye-opening interview. And I have the highest regard already for Mr. Beast, but this was eye-opening. I mean, it was, there's 10 deeper levels than what we even imagine to what's going wow. on with him. And I've listened to it twice already. And just, I mean, I'll share some of the points here that came through it. But the other thing that came into my radar was a gentleman, Tony Seba, who's written a book called Rethinking Humanity. And he's written this historical, global history of our adoption of changing times. You know, like, it seems like there's a lot of, I also watched Ray Dalio's New World Order presentation this week too, but I only saw about half of it so far. So don't spoil it. We're definitely in this shift. You know, we're definitely 2020s for certain is a shift. And I think we've really called it with this shift to Cloudlandia is really a good, you know, placeholder to put over this, because that's what we're doing. And you look at, you know, Mr. Beast is running the VCR formula at the highest level, is really what he's doing, with a real understanding that the multiplier of all of it is reach. And so he focuses on the two things, the two biggest things, vision and reach. And he did, at the 34-minute mark in the interview, he goes on an explanation of essentially the value of ideas over execution and the multiplier importance of them. He said it's certain that the person getting, you know, 1 million views on their videos or 3 million views on their videos is not working three times as hard as the person getting 1 million views. But he said it's even more certain that the person getting 30 million views is 100% not working 30 times harder. It's all about the idea of this. And so he goes through this process where he said he's spent now 10 years obsessing over ideas and with one focus on breaking the YouTube algorithm to get, you know, millions of people to watch his videos. It's been ideas. He's not technical in any way at all. He just is able to articulate his vision, and he hires people. He's got 100 people now that work with him, that he's got infinite capabilities to. And it's interesting, he said it's hard to find the points they realize you can't. Most of the stuff they're doing is new, and, you know, new ideas. So you can't find somebody who already knows how to do the stuff if you're making up new stuff. So you got to find people that have the technical skills, but also have this curiosity and ability to innovate, to figure stuff out, you know? So yeah, very interesting. The level of thought that goes into those, but he gave the updates on the numbers. So Mr. Beast Burger now is at 1,600 locations, opening 50 a week. And over 100 million in revenue. So wow. far. Yeah.
Did he give any idea what the split is that he does? Does he give any indication of why it's fair? You know, it's not win-win, but it's fair. Yeah.
Well, it's actually it's really good, because the model behind it.
Do they buy a subscription? Do they kind of buy a subscription?
Here's how it works. So you are an existing restaurant, and you have all of the equipment necessary to prepare the Mr. Beast menu. And so they'll send you the Mr. Beast kit of how to, for free, no charge. You get the stuff, you have to send videos and stuff of how to prepare the menu. And then your quality control is preparing the menu and videoing and showing it, you know, in detail in the packaging that is, they have the Mr. Beast packaging. So there's, I think, like 26 SKUs that you have to stock from suppliers that you already get food from, because there's only a minimum number of major commercial food suppliers. And so you go through and you prepare the menu and you get approved, and they give you a tablet that is, you know, equipped when the order comes in. You just prepare the food and package it up, and somebody comes and picks it up at the back door, and that's it. And for that, you get roughly, I want to say that you get 35% or 40% or something of cost. And so their goal, you know, is that you should be making a 30% profit margin on what you're doing with them in using your excess capacity. And that was what was beautiful about it, is that the intention of it, Robert Earle is the guy from Virtual Dining Concepts that came up with the idea in the first place, the model. And it was an evolution from ghost kitchens, you know, like first people were separately removing themselves from the main thing, but then they realized, okay, well, there's all these restaurants they're only at 50% at the most right now because of COVID. So if they could do stuff, you know, have another opportunity, that would be a welcome thing. And it was, you know, able to really bridge the gap and create a really viable, but you should see
I'll go to the Joe Rogan. I'll watch the Joe Rogan. Yeah. You know, it's very interesting with Joe Rogan, because about a mile from us, maybe 2 miles, I think it's more closer to 2 miles from us, in the Toronto office, there's a new network, social media network, called Rumble.
Okay.
Have you seen Rumble?
I've heard about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're really interesting, because if the other social media platforms, you know, censor you or blacklist you, Rumble will take you.
Toronto Village?
No, they're on Adelaide, but they're on Adelaide West, I would say, between Spadina and Bathurst.
Okay.
Yeah. And for example, Trump did, there's a group of four guys who do podcasts.
Yeah, I saw that. Mm-hmm.
And they did it at Mar-a-Lago. So they were in Palm Beach. Yeah. And he was real straightforward, because he was talking about the Ukraine Russia war, you know, and why the Russians felt no problem in doing it with the existing White House, but they wouldn't do it when he was in the White House, you know. And they got 5 million downloads before YouTube took it down, you know, and YouTube took it down. So right at the end of it, Trump said, he said, "You guys, you realize this isn't going to be up long. They're going to take this down." And they did. And then it went to Rumble, and it's up on Rumble, and it hasn't been taken down on Rumble, which tells me that the takedowners of the world don't have an ability yet to fool around with this particular platform. And of course, Trump has launched his own, you know, Truth Social.
He
launched that. So my sense is that that's going to happen. There's going to be competitors, you know, competitor platforms. And it's a really interesting thing. So, but Joe Rogan, when he was going through his singer, who I never knew existed, Neil Young, when he went through his, you know, kerfuffle with, well, Joe Rogan didn't pay any attention to Neil Young. It was all Neil Young being ornery and cranky.
Yeah.
And saying to Spotify, it's him or me. And Spotify, they scratched their eyes and said, I think it's going to be Joe, you know.
But the greatest thing about it is without a hint of irony of being the guy who broke through saying, keep on rocking in the free world.
Oh, yeah.
He used to be so anti-establishment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a historic lesson in that, that today's rebels are tomorrow's angry nannies, you know. Anyway, but the thing was that Rumble said, we'll pay you $100 million to Joe Rogan. If Spotify doesn't want you, we'll pay you $100 million to be on our thing. So they must have some really big money. That or they're just audacious bluffers. So anyway, but it's interesting, humans are humans, and humans in one age will use the tools and weapons they have in that age, but in another age it looks like they're doing something different, but they're actually doing motivated by the same mindsets, and they have the same sort of aspirations and goals. It's just that there's different tools and different weapons available to them to use it. So it looks like it's radically different. To give you an idea, because I can think immediately that he's actually picking up on the Sears and Roebuck model from 140 years ago. Do you know the story of Sears?
A little bit. I mean, so tell me, because you're going to talk about
two things had gotten really big, and from around the 1850s to the 1880s. One of them was railroads, and the other one was telegraph. Okay, so you had two technologies.
Yeah.
And Sears was a railroad clerk. He actually managed a railroad office where packages, these are the freight packages. So he was in charge of it. And he got a box and tried to deliver it in the town where he was. And there was no address. There was no such address. So he got back to the office, telegraphed the manufacturer and said, there's no address, and it's going to cost you this much for me to send it back. And the manufacturer said, it's not worth it to us. He said, we'll cut you a deal. If you buy them from us, we'll give you a really good deal, and you can, get rid of them. And Sears was enough of an entrepreneur to say, yes, I'll do that. And he did. And he sold it. But in the act of getting things really cheap and actually selling them, he said, oh my God. And he immediately, he had a Mr. Beast vision. So what he did was that he bought watches, small boxes of watches, and he sent them out to about 150 other railroad clerks under a fictitious name by mistake. And they all came back and they did the same thing that he had done. And he said, well, here's the thing, why don't you do it? And he just added up the figures, what he was doing here. And he says, we could do this with anything. His entire network was created out of existing railroad freight managers. That's basically what they were. Railroad freight managers. And so the railroad freight managers are the existing restaurants in Mr. Beast's network.
I love that. Yeah.
And that's so great. He's doing that. Yeah. And that's how Sears and Roebuck became the, you know, the greatest retailer in the world up until Walmart. And then the next step up was Amazon, you know. And but what they're doing is that the world has already built their system before they were aware of the system.
Say that again. The world had already built.
Yeah, the world had already built the system before they took advantage of the system. Like,
oh, right.
Those 1,600 restaurants that must have beat them.
Yeah, I mean, that's.
The vast majority of them were probably created before he was born, and you know, yeah. Been sitting out there. But they've been underutilized. You know
what? Yeah.
You know, if I go
excess
back to
capacity. Mm.
Yeah. Well, if I go back to Jean Baptiste Say, you know, the first definer of entrepreneurs, that an entrepreneur is someone who takes a resource from a lower level of productivity to a higher level of productivity.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Sears did, and that's what Mr. Beast is doing. That's what Joe Rogan's doing. That's what Joe Rogan's doing.
I love that. Yeah, I love everything about that. And that's, you know, you look backwards now at what these things are doing. That's what Uber has done. That's what Airbnb has done, this whole sharing economy. Mm-hmm. That when you realize that all this excess capacity, that all these cars and humans with those cars driving around with excess time, can make, you know, lots of opportunities now to just tap into the money stream with your own hours whenever you want, taking people from one place to another, or while you're doing that, dropping food from one place to another, dropping groceries, doing all that.
But here's the thing, you know, a lot of people will see Mr. Beast and watch what he's done, and they'll say, well, this is easy, we can do it. And then, but Mr. Beast already had a huge following that he had created before he got this idea.
Yes. Well, the vision, it's why.
I mean, he was up to 50. I mean, when you first introduced him to me, I think he was at 50 million already. And that was before the hamburger idea.
Yeah.
Or the burger.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But you look at that now and it's, you know, you do realize that's where. That's why the reach is a multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reach is the multiplying thing. And that's, it's the most important, you know, I don't know, not necessarily the most important because they're all important. If you've got, and lots of people have excess capacity in reach. A lot of people have reach that they don't even realize that they have access to or have a plan for doing it, you know. And that's,
well,
that
can I give you
away.
A little surprise example of my own, okay. Little tiny, compared to what you were talking, this is just a little tiny one, but we got a note from Reed Tracy, the publisher of Hay House. And so the two books and the books are doing really well. We're selling the two of them together, the average is about 13,000 books a month. So it's
that's awesome.
So it's selling really great. Again, hats off to you, because without who, not how, I wouldn't be doing this. But he told us that, so the book came out middle of October 2021. This is The Gap in the Gain book. And he told us that Penguin Random House, which is a huge multinational publisher, you know, long, well-established publisher.
Yes.
But they pick up other people's ebooks and send them out through their network because there's no cost. There's really no cost of acquiring an ebook.
Right.
Okay. And so they picked up The Gap in the Gain at the end of October last year. And, you know, and then they were putting out their figures for their ebook sales for 2021, they discovered that in just 2 months, it went to number one. It was number one out of the 1,000 ebooks that they had picked up that year.
That's exciting.
I mean, it's one thing. Man, it's one thing. It's one thing to identify, you know, and take advantage of a reach system. Mm-hmm. It's another thing is where the reach system just picked up your thing and reached you, and you didn't even know about it. I mean, we didn't. But it goes back to the idea. They don't do that with everything. You have to have an idea. You have to have an idea to start with.
Yes. It's the catalyst.
Yeah.
The idea is the catalyst. Yeah. And it's such a good, you know, it's like, yeah, the idea on its own, that's the thing. An idea is it requires, and let's just think this through, because I'm thinking something new here, that the idea on its own does not have the same capacity, I guess, as the reach on its own, in a way. Mm-hmm. Like it requires the reach, or it benefits from the reach. And it's a useful exposure for the reach to do, like, to maximize the reach.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, something that, you know, I think about from the, you know, the second that you told me it, and I'm crediting it to you. So I don't know if it was something that you had heard and passed on to me, or it was your idea. But that a compelling offer is 10 times more persuasive than a convincing argument.
That's me. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Because I've been telling everybody it's you. So I just wanted to make sure that was true. So here's the thing. Convincing arguments don't go anywhere in the VCR system, but compelling offers do.
Yes, that's exactly right.
But the multiplier you're talking about is that a compelling offer is a million times more persuasive than a convincing argument.
that's probably true. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Depending on the reach, you know, the reach platform that you're using.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the thing about compelling is that the compelling is when you get the benefit of the jet stream of human intention, you know, that it jives with what they really want. When somebody is compelled to get something, this comes back to the more cheese, less whiskers.
Yeah.
It comes back to that you don't have to convince a mouse to try the cheese. Right, the mouse is compelled to get the cheese.
Yes.
So much so it's the prime directive of the mouse. And if you can attach your offer to a compulsion,
mm-hmm.
that's a rocket fuel. That's what it is.
Yeah. But the thing is, if the person offering the compelling offer has whiskers, then
that's the art of it, for sure. It's being able to, and that really, the only way to do that is to really have the true intention of the
serving
best. Yes, serving.
Creating value. You know, it's really interesting. One of one of my quarterly books is not the last one, but the one before that is called American Happiness. Mm-hmm. And in it, I say, and this is just an observation from a life where I've lived 2/3 of my lifetime outside of the U.S. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'm in my 51st year of living in Toronto, and then with military duty and, you know, and then I just added up major vacations and everything in actual, you know, actual calendar time. It adds up, you know, I'll be 78 and I've spent 2/3 of two-thirds, easily two-thirds of that time, mm-hmm. not within the borders of the U.S., but I'm a very, I'm a very committed American in spirit. And since the main impact of Strategic Coach and the main tax that's generated by Strategic Coach happens within the United States, it's, I feel okay about that. Yeah. But one of the things that I said that the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is absolutely the best, and I don't think can be surpassed, compelling offer that any country has ever made to the rest of the world.
Yeah. It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. And I had a really interesting podcast with, and I said, going back to that, just in the very first chapter of our book, I said, the U.S. is very interesting because what the founders did right back in the 1780s, they made a bet on the country, on the future of the country, that they would bet on individual Americans betting on their future. So it was a bet on a bet. It was a double bet. They bet the country, individuals, through their own individualism and ingenuity, that they would create the country. And we'll just create a structure where just, a million people and then 10 million, 100 million people will bet their future.
That's true. I think that's however fragile or limiting self-interest is, it's the one, you've said that before, it's the one bottomless
that you
supply,
can count on.
The one we can count on is people acting in their self-interest.
Yeah. I mean, Madison, who I think is the real, he's the real he's the real programmer here. If you look back at the history, he's a little guy. He was about, 5'2" and he weighed just over 100 pounds. But he was the master of constitutions. He had in his state, he had the most collected constitutions in the history of the world.
Oh, wow.
And then he and Hamilton and Jay, these were three prominent people, John Jay, they put together a series of essays that were published in the
Federalist.
All the Federalist Papers, And the one, Hamilton was really a brilliant. Yeah, he did. But the one that is the most important one was, it's called number 10. It's Federalist Paper number 10, and that's Madison's. And among other things that he says in there, he says, if men were angels, we wouldn't need government.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that was the interesting thing that now I know where that's coming from, but Milton Friedman one time said to Phil Donahue, as a guest,
I remember
on the show.
I've seen that.
He said, "Where do you propose that we find these angels to come organize society without regard to self-interest?" And he said to Phil, "I don't even trust you to do that, Phil."
and there's this whole thing that we can't depend on virtue. So let's find a really great way of depending on vice.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And
that is interesting.
Because you can count on that. You can count on that. And then, people will self-regulate. And, the other thing is people want to be well thought of, generally speaking. They want to be, for the people that really matter to them, they want those people to think well of them.
Oh, so, they would never paint their self-preservation as vice.
No.
Nobody would ever do that, right?
No. Yeah. I was talking just as a brief conversation because I really don't want to get into that, but it was about the Russian-Ukrainian thing, and it was at lunchtime in one of the workshops, and somebody said, he's almost evil. And I said, I think he's complicated, Putin. I'm talking about Putin here.
Yeah.
And I said, first of all, I think he actually is a total Russian patriot. I think the worst thing that ever happened, well, kind of a Soviet patriot, you know, because he thinks that the collapse of the Soviet Union was just the worst thing that ever happened to the world.
And, right.
You know, he had a position in it. He had, you know, he was a colonel in the KGB, and he, you know, he thought it was pretty good. Anyway, and I said, I would find him more credible as a present-day Russian patriot if he wasn't the richest man in the world.
Mm. Yes.
I mean, Mark Zuckerberg thinks he has a lot. He really doesn't. He really doesn't compare it to Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm.
Because Zuckerberg has tried to earn it honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this
Putin
is...
Putin never saw the need for the honest part, you know. So,
right.
You know, he's a taker. So the thing is that what I'm saying here is that everybody's a mixture of a lot of different things, you know. And depending on whether you like them or you don't like them, you pick out the thing that argues for your case.
Yeah, and there was a movie, a documentary that was really primarily an extended form interview, like several hours, of Oliver Stone doing an interview with Putin. And it was really well done. I mean, it was really, I think it was a good insight into him. And I agree with what you're saying, that I believe that he would think of himself as a Russian patriot. You're right. Or a Soviet patriot.
Yeah.
And he realized.
Yeah.
I that's where I got that. He's the one that talked about the presidents, because he's seen all the new presidents come in. And what he said to Oliver Stone was, they all come in and I believe they're good men and they have good, you know, desire for change. And they rally people on the basis of that change. And then they get elected and they come in and they sit in the office and the men in the suits come and tell them how it really is. And there is no change.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the way, that's the historical pattern that he's seen. That is,
including himself.
Yeah, which is really interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that's something, though, for as an insight.
Yeah, well, my take on it, that things change because of the... the motivations and the personal interests of, in the United States, of 330 million people, or 340, whatever the number is, 340. And that combined mixing, unpredictable mixing of individual aspirations and capabilities produces constant surprises and changes.
Right.
And generally speaking, the president who can explain those the best actually gets credit for it. And the one who constantly gets taken by surprise by it is seen as weak and incompetent.
Mm.
You know, I think it's an explaining kind of skill. Can you explain this in such a way that that people say, I feel better, I feel better? That kind of tells me what's going on.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm excited about our get together in Palm Beach.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun thing. I was just doing some of the, you know, updates on things that have happened with the VCR formula since we first introduced.
Yeah.
The concept.
Yeah, it's really good. And we've got a client who's going to speak in the afternoon, and he's got a test. And it's, is your company future ready? So he's put a test together. And so we're going to send out the test beforehand.
Uh-huh.
And the results will be, you know, the results will be processed. And then he'll talk what he, and his specialty is that he's created two award-winning films on the use of blockchain around the world.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
He lives in Mississauga. And he's from somewhere in the Middle East. I'm trying to think where he is in the Middle East. He's an immigrant to Canada, as so many of us are. And and I just found out about him, and I called him up, and I says, "Can you come and talk to our Free Zone group?" He says, "Oh boy, I'd be delighted to." Yeah. Anyway, so that's, and I think it's going to be you and him for the day, because I've got some new thinking exercises.
Oh, no.
And I want to create some slack in the day so that we're not, I tell you what I'm liking. I went back to in person, so I've done two. I did one last Tuesday and the Thursday before, so I've done two of them. And they're different. They're very different from pre-lockdown. They're very different. Yeah.
Oh.
And I haven't put my finger yet on what the difference is. But one of the things is, I think they're different because we at Strategic Coach are different. Because we've acquired an amazing global capability during the last...
Yeah.
I think it's changing everything that... how we think about ourselves, how we explain coach and everything. So I think that there's a difference. But right at the beginning, I told Kathy Davis, I said, I'm going to plan the in-person as if they're going to be 6 hours. Okay. So, and the reason is because we have backup Zoom workshops for people who can't make it during the quarter. This quarter, especially, because people are still kind of caught between two
right.
worlds.
Yeah, that's
but
what happened.
Going into the future, we always have quarters where people can't make their workshop, and we've got a backup workshop, a Zoom workshop for all those. Yeah. So I did it 6 hours, and then I had 2 hours left over for just freeform discussion and answering questions. And I tell you, Dean, it's just absolutely delicious.
Yes. That's what I love about the format of the Breakthrough Blueprint like that. We've got the big context, but it all takes on the form of what...
What do people think about it?
Exactly. What's actually happening right now with that.
Yeah.
So it looks like I've successfully timed the trough of flattening the curve. Again, I've got up doing a Breakthrough Blueprint 2 weeks here in, I guess not 2 weeks now. It's not this Monday, but next Monday. So eight day, a week from now, which will be great. Our friend Derek from Introduction, from Strategic Coach there. He's going to be down. Yeah.
He's a great guy. He's the great condo guy. He's the great condo guy. And one of my, I have two or three who are the top condo people in Toronto. I mean, there's a lot of condos in Toronto, so why wouldn't there be? He's really a great guy.
And Gary Claiborne is going to be down as well. It'll be fun.
Yeah that's really good. It's really interesting. You talk about going back to our reach discussion and a compelling offer, sort of kind of adding those two tools. And Mike Koenigs and I have sort of similar backgrounds, small town Midwesterners. Religion wise, we both grew up in Catholic, going through the Catholic school. And I have a lot of people, it's sort of a theme in the movies and everything else of how when you're an adult, you have sort of negative, bitter feelings towards, Catholic Church and religion and everything else. And I have zero. I thought it was fun. I thought it was like...
You enjoyed it.
It was like growing up, because of my entire teen and early 20s, it was gorgeous music. It was incense. It was stained glass windows. And it was all in a foreign language. And it was like spending your childhood, living in Grand Opera. It was like Grand Opera like that. I just thought it was really neat, and everything like that. And fortunately, you know, I had parents who, you know, kind of encouraged me and gave me a lot of freedom. And, you know, and we're busy. One of the things I appreciated most about my parents is that they were busy, so you could get away with a lot.
Right. And you were the youngest.
No, yeah. I was the youngest for a long time, and there's two younger. So,
okay.
But I was number five, and number five is born with an invisibility cloak.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you weren't the center of attention.
Yeah, the first thing you learn is how not to cast a shadow.
Right, right, right.
You kind of know the parts of the floor that squeak. So, you don't walk on those. You know, you're silent and you're quick. Yeah. But anyway, so I talked to Mike. We were just talking one day, and I said, you know, I think that the Christianity, not necessarily the Catholic Church, but I think Christianity actually created capitalism. And he says, what? He says, what? I said, yeah, I think they did it. I think Christianity, right back at the beginning, right back in the year one, I think they created. And he says, I don't understand what you're doing. And I said, well, look at it back then, you know, and this is around the world. There were just a few really powerful people who had everything, and everybody else, you know, didn't really count, and they didn't have anything. And it was profoundly unfair. I mean, it doesn't take much comparison between yourself and other people to understand that this really wasn't fair.
Right.
And they came across with a really great idea, Christianity, speaking about the impact of Christ and, you know, the apostles, and especially St. Paul, who was kind of like the Ray Kroc. He was like the Ray Kroc of Christianity. And, you know, Ray. Yeah. And so you could say that what happened, you know, with Christ and the apostles was a bit like the McDonald brothers building a couple of restaurants in a backward, not very prosperous country. And St. Paul comes along and says, you know, oh, this has got to go worldwide. So he said, this isn't just for Jews. This is for everybody. This is for Gentiles, you know. And the moment he did that, it started going throughout. And what he had on his hands is the biggest reach system in the history of the world to that point, and that was the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And it swept through the Roman Empire because it had a compelling offer and said, no matter what happens in this world, it, you know, kind of accommodate yourself to it. Because when you get to the next world, everybody starts fresh.
And the mansions. Don't forget the mansions.
Yeah.
The many mansions.
Yeah, the many mansions. So here's the thing. You see the emperor there?
Mm.
Yeah, he's got it good. He's got it good. But he's going to get judged the same way when he dies as anyone else. So look at him. I mean, his chances of really of actually compiling a really good record aren't as good as yours. You can actually just be a good person and you can take advantage of it.
Right.
So I think what happened is that promise of a second start changed the world.
Even in the, yeah, exactly. In the present, it changed it.
Yeah, right. Instantly, mm-hmm. It changed it. And right from the beginning when they had church services, the emperor could come, but everybody else was more or less equal to the emperor. I mean, if, you know, probably wasn't the emperor, but it was high aristocrats and wealthy people. They came and they were on the same ground. So my sense was that was an amazing idea, that idea that accept the life that you have right now and work hard. But it also meant that you could choose how you wanted to spend your life over centuries. I'm not saying it mm-hmm. happened then. But by the time you get 1,000 years into, Christianity, now you can start saying, is it okay if I just work hard and make a lot of money during this lifetime?
Mm-hmm. And
so my sense was it introduced freedom, real freedom into your life that, first of all, lead the life that you're given, because the way you lead this life and what you make of this life counts in the next life. And I think that's sort of a capitalist idea.
Amazing.
What do you think of that?
I think I agree with that. I hadn't heard it like that before, but yeah. How do they say it? All jive.
I told it to Mike, and Mike felt a lot better about his upbringing after I told him that. Yeah. I said, you know, I know people in the next life. Mike, I'm going to put in a good word for you.
Right, exactly. Oh, man. I know people.
And Dean, I put you in for the Easy Pass VIP entrance.
Okay, good. There we go. That'll go with me forever.
Yeah, you have the gold pass. You have the gold
pass. I got the gold pass. That's right. I love it.
Yeah, you got the gold pass. But I think, you know, people who are, you know, really religious in that, they said, well, you're being kind of sacrilegious. No, I said, no, just stepping back, I'm a visitor from another planet.
Right.
I'm watching what goes on. I'm just trying to describe what I think works and doesn't work in this, you know, in this situation. And I said, I think, and it goes back to just the sheer power of a single idea.
Mm-hmm.
If it is taken up in a system that can give it instant, enormous reach.
Yes, I agree. That's what's exciting, is that this is where these, you know, the worthwhile pursuit of your own reach audience is a very, it's the thing that can be done with capital. It's one of those things. And it's an asset that you're developing that doesn't require, it's leverageable, because whether you've got, you know, 100,000 or 100 million, it's just a bigger number, but you're still doing one thing to deploy it, right? The content, the thing that you're getting out to. Mm-hmm. So it's total leverageable. It doesn't require 10 times more work to send million emails versus 100,000 emails.
Yeah.
Right.
The whole thing is that what I think when we do that VCR inventory, you know, right at the beginning, which we'll repeat, you know, when you come to, you got to know what you have in order to do something more in order to be far, far, you know, far, far bigger and better than where you are, you have to actually know what you have where you are.
And that you have to be able to know, when you know it, you have to know it in a way that establishes your collaborative assets as well.
Yes.
That you've got, that's what is the key to the free zone, is knowing. Mm-hmm. Most people are just blind to what their real assets are, or they haven't thought them through what they are, or positioned them in a way to modularly contribute them to a free zone collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've told you about him, but there's this free zone, a new free zoner in July. He's from Pakistan, Shahid. And he's the biggest manufacturer and distributor of cookies and crackers.
Okay.
In the country of Pakistan. Okay.
Yes.
So big multinational calls him and said, we'd actually like to purchase your company. And he says, no, you don't want to purchase my assets. You just like to take advantage of my capability. Mm. So he said, why don't we just have a chat about what you have and what I have, and we'll put together a collaboration and we'll just send you money.
Right.
In other words, you give us what you have.
Yeah.
He said, I suspect you double what I can offer throughout my network just by looking at what you have that I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's all electronically controlled. So, you know, you'll be able to account for it. So what could have taken a year and a half with a lot of lawyers and travel and expense and frustration, and then he'd be an employee, he stayed an entrepreneur, and within 3 months they were shipping product. And so when he told me about it, okay, and I knew about it before it actually was a done deal. So he had joined Coach virtually, done signature for 4 workshops, 1 year, and bumped up the first time he could. So this was his 5th workshop. And I said, well, you have an amazing capability that there's no way that they can produce it. Yeah. And he said, well, it's cookies and crackers. No, that's not your capability. And he said, well, what's my capability? And I said, Pakistan.
Access to Pakistan.
Well, knowledge of Pakistan, yeah, relationships, right, exactly, in Pakistan, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Street addresses in Pakistan.
right.
Yeah. And I said, they don't have any of that, nor could they produce it. That's what they really want. They want a new capability called Pakistan. So anyway, it happens, and he's now working on 2 others where they're food related, you know, they're what he does, and he's seeing what they could be. And I said, did that guy ever come to Pakistan? He said, yeah. He said, after we've been up and running with collaboration for 3 months, he said, yep, he came. And I said, so, and he said he was really impressed. And I said, why? He says, well, I introduced him to a friend of mine. We had dinner together. And I said, who is the friend? He says, President of Pakistan.
He was impressed. That's funny.
No, but it kind of shows you. I mean, it's what can be, I mean, from the standpoint of reach, you know, but I mean, it can take all sorts of different forms. Everybody thinks about it like it's the internet. Well, it could be anything. It could be anything where, you know, it could
funny.
Be.
It's funny now, if you look about, you know, we had between, you know, Genius Network, we had Stephen Harper at Genius Network. We've got the president of Pakistan at the, you know, in Free Zone. It's so, has a connection. The world is smaller, you know.
Yeah, and we live in that kind of world now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the interesting thing. I go back, I tell everybody, I said, Zoom is not a communication system, it's a transportation system. I said, if you think it's just you will not access more than 1/10 of the value of Zoom.
Right.
If you think it's a transportation system.
That's it.
So what have you thought further about in the course of discussion?
Well, I'm really, you know, I'm doubling down on this idea of ideas, you know. What I really need to formalize the, you know, the value of these ideas is really the output of them for me, in a way. You know, like I have been, I've got a long history of having big catalytic ideas for other people that are more capitalized than my own ideas for me. Which is an interesting place to be in. So I'm just kind of looking at the, you know, the combination of packaging the ideas with the capabilities and the reach, being a producer or being whether that's the model. I'm exploring models on that of how do you do things like that, because in the beginning the ideas are deceptive in that you recognize it as a good idea, but it doesn't immediately feel like it has the economic value that it has until coupled with a capability and a reach.
Yeah. You know,
I'd love to have your take on
go ahead.
As I said, let that have your take on your lens through my situation kind of thing. I'd love to, because you are someone who has reverence for and and extraction of value from ideas.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the last real push year for me, because the moment I hit January 1st next year, all the 10 times workshop time, immediately I get 44 days back, you know, 44. That's just 40, and that's not counting the prep work at all. That's just the actual coaching. Right. So I get that back, and it's all in place. We have four coaches who are in the process of taking over. And so I get that back, and the thing I'd like to do is, and we can look ahead as early as possible in 2023, is for me to do the eight profit activators to do your workshop. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you my feeling. I'll approach it just from the standpoint, you know, I'll just say, I'll apply it to myself, you know, and apply it to coach. But just what we, you know, you never know. I mean, you get together and it's, I think it's a huge platform. I think that.
I do too. Like, I see it in the right.
And I think that there's, you know, I have this new tool, new thing, which is called Shortcuts, Programs, and Platform. Mm-hmm. And you'll see that. You'll see that when you come to Chicago, and it's really gone far. It's really, it's actually Shortcuts times Programs equals Platform. It's actually a formula.
Right.
And the thing is that entrepreneurs don't look at their world that way. They don't. The tech giants totally see their world as applications, programs, and platform. But entrepreneurs don't. And they have lots and lots of shortcuts. I've never met an entrepreneur where I say, is there any shortcut that you've created to help your clients think that? And sure enough, and then you ask them again. And by the time you're finished with the conversation, there's about five or six things which they have created, but they don't take it seriously. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really, I see that as, like, that's what I look at the Breakthrough Blueprint, that eight profit activator model, as an EOS, similar type of thing.
Totally.
A contextual.
Me too. Yeah. Now, who are the who's who allow you to dominate the world with this without you leaving your sofa out in the
white couch. Exactly. Right. Yeah. 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 And I thought about that. Like, I look at what I think about, cause I often channel you in my mind thinking, what would Dan do, or how would I observe what you do with this? And I think that if you just observe, you're doing workshops or coming up with new advancements for the workshops, and that's really all you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a shortcutter.
Yeah. And so there's those things.
Ask me about any other activity in my company that doesn't involve me shortcutting, and I don't have the least bit of interest in that other activity.
Right.
Being involved with it. I have interest in it because it's all part of a bigger piece, but I have no interest in being a part of those activities.
Yeah. Interesting. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah. And I'm really eager to see the Joe Rogan.
I am eager for you to do that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll give you feedback on it, because both of them are masters of this particular game.
Yes. I'd love that. That's great. I can't wait for you to see it.
Yeah. It's like Leonardo and Einstein having.
Could you imagine? Yeah.
Coffee, having coffee.
Yeah. You know? Awesome.
Okay.
Okay. Well, have a great week in Chicago, and I will talk to you next time, same time. Okay. Awesome. Thanks, Dan.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.